Reverend. Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Question Reality with Priscilla Leona, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Question Reality. My name is Priscilla Leona. I am producer and host of this show, and we are coming to you live from Los Angeles, California. Now, this show is definitely for you if you are questioning your career reality by considering or currently pursuing a career in the entertainment industry. For 8 years, our guests have provided advice and resource information on how and what it takes to successfully pursue a career in a wide variety of show business positions. Now, the guests on our show include Emmy winners, Grammy winners, Tony Award winners, reality TV stars, producers, directors, casting directors, talent managers, screenwriters, actor, singer, dancer, model, musicians, comedians. The list goes on and on. We even throw in a darn entertainment attorney once in a while, just in case you never know when you're going to need one. So we've got them all on here. But what's important to note is that all of our guests have been selected because they're at different stages of their careers, from professional, obviously, to beginner. We throw a beginner in there once in a while because we want to hear about the laurels and accolades and trials and tribulations. So that means that we are definitely going to have someone on the show who can personally relate to you, and they're able to answer your show business career questions. Now, if you missed any of our shows or want to seek advice about a specific entertainment career, you can always go to our archive page, and that is on the latalkradio.com website. And you search for our title, which is Question Reality, or you can search by my name, Priscilla Leona. And all of the Question Reality shows are also available for free on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher.com under the podcast section. Please make sure you get your new app. We just designed this incredible new app, mobile app. It's free, and it's on the homepage of the LA Talk Radio website because it's located towards the bottom. You definitely want to get this app because we have a ton of shows on LA Talk Radio. It is not just entertainment. We have shows that cover all spectrums of life, the spectrum of life. You go there and you'd be amazed at all the really great shows that you hear. Now, finally, very exciting news. If you want to be a guest on our show or refer someone to be on the show who wants to promote their projects or come on and give tips, advice, and resource information on how to make it in show business, we are currently booking for 2017. But you have to go to our official website, which is questionrealityradioshow.com. questionrealityradioshow.com. That's our official website. And there you can see all of the guests that are going to be on for the entire year of 2017. And that is also how you would submit to be on our show. And that would be under the contact link. So questionrealityradioshow.com. That is how you get on and talk to me. Wow, that's really exciting. What a boon. What a great laurel that is. But it is. I'm just going to say it is. Hey, we have a wonderful guest, as we do every week, on the show today. His name is Mr. Dale E. Turner. And Dale Turner is a stage, film, television, and voiceover actor. And his website, which I want you to go to right now, is daleeturner.com. daleeturner.com. And let me just tell you a little bit about him. He is an American stage film, television, and voiceover actor. And Mr. Turner has numerous credits on such projects such as the Coen Brothers film Intolerable Cruelty, ABC's Modern Family. He has numerous voiceovers for mega hit video games such as Grand Theft Auto 5. He's done over 60 commercials, stage plays, and musicals across the country. And he is a very accomplished singer. Now, recently, Mr. Turner has been focusing on writing with his most recent short film project, which is entitled My Name is Lamar. I know you've heard that because I'm promoting it on the show with Linda Palmer as the director. Promoting it again, but now you get to listen to the writer. Again, My Name Lamar is based on a true story, and this short film is a winner of the Award of Merit from the Best Shorts competition. It is the recipient of 11 nominations at the 2017 Idlewild IFC and an official selection at the SE Manly Short Film Showcase. And I can proudly say that I am a co-producer because it's an absolutely wonderful short film. It is a definite must-see. And when I say proudly, I really mean it, because sometimes the film projects that you get associated with don't turn out to be ones you're most proud of. Everybody knows how that goes. But this is something that I definitely feel so proud to be involved with. And the excitement just... It's a buzz. You got to see the film. And when we talk to Mr. Turner, he'll tell us how you will be able to see it too shortly. Now, the excitement of writing continues for Dale because he is currently shopping four screenplays and a sitcom. The excitement is abound with Dale Turner. Welcome to the show, Dale Turner. What is going on? You are just so active. You are whipping it out.
Well, kind of a strange way to put it, but yeah, I'm having a lot of fun right now.
I just heard the whipping it out. Doesn't sound too good, but just go with it. I'm Irish from the East Coast, and I talk like a drunken sailor, so we're going to have to roll with it. You're going to have to acclimate, but I'll be gentle with you today. Now, listen, congratulations on the success of My Name is Lamar. Again, it is really taking the festival circuit by storm. And it's the winner of the merit from the Best Shorts competition, which I've heard many, many people who say this is a really fantastic competition. Again, recipient of 11 nominations. You must be so proud. But let's tell the people who don't know about this film briefly what the film is about. What is My Name is Lamar about?
Well, it is based on a true story, and it takes one look at the genesis of racism, and knowing that it is it's not bound by geography or age. It is taught from generation to generation, and this is a situation where Lamar is faced with an unlikely source of that racism and how he deals with it.
And now, can you tell us about the inspiration for the story? Because you did say it's a true story. What was the inspiration for the story?
Well, the actual incident that happened is captured on film. It actually happened to me quite a while ago, but I never really brought it to fruition. I just had it bother me pretty much for the last 40 years. And I've been telling that story to a couple of my friends, and in particular, Verne Watson, a great character actress for a lot of years. She's one of my closest friends. I told her the story, and she convinced me that it could be a short film, and I didn't agree. And I went home that night, went to sleep, woke up, and I called her first thing in the morning. I said, you know what, I have an ending. And it's actually been very cathartic for me.
Now, it's been such a big hit on the film festival circuit. Did you expect that this particular genre, or actually this storyline, would be such a big hit?
I am completely floored by the success. Now, you had mentioned the 11 nominations at Idlewild. Well, the Idlewild Festival was last weekend, and we walked away with three of the awards, including Best Screenplay by some guy named Dale Turner. I don't know, maybe an author.
He's whipping it out. Currently,
yeah, still whipping it out. That's a line straight from Blazing Saddles. I appreciate that.
Oh my gosh, I didn't even know that. I swear to God, I did not even know that. I've seen Blazing Saddles one time, so
indeed,
that's good. I'm gonna keep it now. I'm gonna keep it now and say, Dale Turner.
There you go. To the success of the film, especially on the festival circuit, we completed a very successful weekend at the S.E. Manley Short Film Showcase. We seemed to be the talk of the town of that particular showcase. And on the very last day of that showcase, we found out that we are official selections at both the Hollywood Black Film Festival and also the Pasadena International Film Festival. So we're quite pleased with that.
Wow. Wow. Oh, my gosh. It just gives you tingles, doesn't it? I just feel so proud to be associated with that film. Oh, my goodness. Now, what feedback have you been receiving from the film on, say, a contemporary level, like your contemporaries, maybe people on the street, your family members? What have they been saying about it?
It's pretty much universal from my fellow actors. They're really happy with the dramatic elements of it and the storytelling. The fact that I compiled so much information, and the film's only 7 minutes and 15 seconds with credits, but there is a definite beginning, middle, and end, and there's so much in there. So the powerful attributes of it are coming across the way that I would hope that they would be. As far as the people of color that have seen the film, their reaction is one that I was really hoping for, which was everyone has had this sort of situation happen to them sometime in their life. So the relatability of Lamar really hones through. But the ending is very, very touching. And it's like the tagline of the film that we came up with, which was an education for a generation.
Very powerful. Now, what do you hope the audience will take away from seeing My Name is Lamar? What message do you hope the audience is going to take away from this film?
Well, the main message is to curtail the learning of racism and intolerance. We're seeing a movement nationwide right now with the ladies yesterday and with the emergence of this new administration. Hopefully there is going to be a lot more demonstration and the voice of the people who have been disenfranchised all these many years are finally going to stand up. And I've been around long enough. I grew up in the 60s, and I've been telling my own daughters and a lot of my friends, it feels like the 60s all over again with the protesting and the music and the solidarity of people across all of the racial and gender boundaries. So I'm quite enthused of what's going on right now.
That's so weird that you said that. I just told my husband that exact same thing yesterday. I said it feels like the 60s. Of course, I wasn't born in the 60s, but I know what happened in the 60s, and I know that it definitely has that feeling. So let me ask you, do you feel that prejudice from when you say people of color, because I'm Caucasian, when you say people mm-hmm. of color, are you talking about just African Americans, or are you talking about people who are Indian and Muslim or anyone that is non-white, or are you just speaking specifically?
Very definition of people of color. That is a very definition of it. African Americans, Asians, Latinos,
okay.
across that whole broad spectrum. There is that the feeling that we don't matter. And hopefully the lesson of Lamar will bring people to the conclusion that all folks matter, and that words are hurtful, and that we can learn from that sort of attitude, that we can turn this around and coexist peacefully.
How is it that what is, you just said that the feeling is that Black lives don't matter. What is it that, are you specifically saying that it's Caucasians that make people of color feel like they don't matter, or what is it that they do that makes them feel like people of color don't matter? What is it specifically that has caused this great divide that Caucasians, I'm assuming you're referring to, I'm not sure, but what is it that they're doing that has caused this feeling amongst people of color?
Well, it's just the condition of the country. We've been, especially folks, I'm African American or Black. I'm old school, so I like to be referred to as Black. Has just been disenfranchised. The system in America has been set up to not really include us. I mean, you go all the way back to the Constitution and how we're not even considered a whole person. But the way that the system has been set up over the years, whether it be education, the possibility of jobs, all of that discrimination has not, it's gotten a little better, but it's still there. I mean, just from the very fact that if you get pulled over by a police officer for a ticket, he will come up and ask you for your license, and you will very calmly do that. We don't experience that. Me as a Black man, I don't experience that. I have to figure out, okay, what is the best thing that I need to say to make sure that I get home? And so, and that's just one example. There's just across the board examples of that. So I wholeheartedly agree with the folks that created the Black Lives Matter, because proportionately it just feels like we don't matter.
But with the success that African Americans have had, they're extremely, you know, gifted, and I feel every area of every job. I mean, I have many African Americans friends, and they are just so brilliant in science and in technology, and certainly in the entertainment industry. And you see so many successful rappers, and you see their superior, I feel, and this is my personal opinion, I feel they're superior vocally and in music and also sports. I mean, in my opinion, they just dominate. They're extremely gifted. I mean, they're just brilliant. You've got African Americans who are making millions and millions and millions of dollars in sports and in music and in various other fields. So that is that looked upon as some sort of progress and success, that they are, a lot of them are more successful than a majority of Caucasians? Is that looked at all and factored in, that they have those opportunities just as every other person in America now?
No, I mean,
it isn't.
I'm sorry to chuckle, but sure. Just by the very nature of the positions that you were mentioning, those are very, very minute numbers in terms of success across the board, even within the entertainment business. Yeah, there are some folks that make a lot of money making films or anything, but yeah, there are no folks of color that are making decisions on a television level. Nobody's running a studio. And, you know, you have to throw Oprah aside as an exception. But overall, No, it's been a tough sledding. It's still tough sledding. I'm not saying that it's impossible, and we're getting there.
Yeah.
Just in general, it's still really, really tough across no matter what profession that you choose in.
Okay, got it. Okay, so my name Lamar is a subject that speaks. It's a very powerful message, and you feel that it completes. You've completed your mission as far as what you wanted to say in this film.
Yes.
Okay.
I believe I have.
Good. Yeah. Okay. And on this project, what was the most exciting thing for you about being the producer or the director or the screenwriter? I know you weren't the director. I don't know if you were a producer, but as the writer. So what was the most exciting thing? I guess maybe
the
project.
I'm the executive producer and the writer of this. As a writer, I just to get on the set and hear someone say your words is pretty thrilling. And I felt like I was, my body was escaping me because it's really a tremendous feeling to hear your words being spoken by folks. And the fact that from where I came from in this industry and the folks that I've worked with in the past, they talk about writing and they talk about substance and story, but to actually hear those words being spoken is really a dream come true.
What are your overall goals for the film?
You know what? One of my producers asked me that when we first started that, and I said, "Well, I have a little fantasy of this is the type of film that back in the day when we used to go to the main movies, there's always a little, whether it be a cartoon or a little movie they would show before the main feature. I could see Lamar being that sort of short film, and also something that's mandatory watching throughout the world's curriculum, not just the United States schools, but the world's curriculum, because in education for a generation.
And let's talk about the cast members. Who I'd like to give some credit to them. Who are the cast members?
Well, Julia Parker plays Suzanne Phillips, Lamar's wife. Aaron Stahl is Brad. He is the manager of the restaurant that Lamar works part-time in. And his workers include Keisha Bell, Sophia Thomas, Carlos Padilla Jr., and Nora Madonna. And then there's some flashback scenes, which include Wendy Weldon, who plays the waitress, and Miss Megan Henry, who is the realtor in the piece.
Now, I could have sworn I was, I'm producer on a feature film called As Evil Does, and one of our actresses, we were doing a reshoot, and she told me, she said, "Oh, I'm so excited, I just got cast for a part in a short film called My Name is Lamar," and but I don't see her name. What happened to her? Her name was, I don't remember her last name, but it was, her first name is Hoagie?
She had some, she was originally cast as a realtor, but she had some scheduling difficulties.
Oh, so that's what happened. Okay. I was like, what happened to little Hoagie? Where's little Hoagie? Okay. I wonder what happened to her. I asked someone, and they're like, I don't know what happened. Now, can you tell the audience, this is more like falls under career advice, but to finish this out, can you tell the audience what happens to a film after it concludes from the film festival circuit, or what, as a filmmaker, you hope will happen?
Well, this is my first venture into being behind the camera, and I'm going to be just as excited as you are to find out myself. And I've already talked about my dreams in terms of what I would hope to see Lamar end up being part of the school's curriculum and or as a quick feature before a major film. So.
Okay. Well, more congratulations again to you, as I understand that you've written a dramatic feature called Chalkline, and I understand it's a quarter finalist in the Final Draft Big Break screenwriting contest. So let's start first by you briefly telling us what this particular film is about.
Oh, Chalkline is a story about a former IRA Army captain who ends up being an assassin for hire after the death of his wife and son. They were killed in a car blast, meant for him. So he comes to the United States, ends up being an assassin, and he becomes quite proficient at it. That's why they nicknamed him Chalkline. But on one particular assignment, he misses, ends up killing a child, and eventually ends up falling in love with the mother of that child. So,
That sounds like it's got my hottie written all over. That sounds like a Channing Tatum or more. Oh, what's that Irish actor, that really gorgeous guy? Oh, that sounds like him. Oh, what is his name?
I was thinking about Colin Farrell.
That's it! Colin Farrell! That's it! As soon as you said that, you gave me the storyline, Colin Farrell popped right into my head. I saw Channing Tatum, but that's for another reason. He just pops into my head all day long, so that's a totally different story. But Colin Farrell, for sure. Oh, I love that. Yeah, we're definitely thinking alike on that. Let's try to get him. Let's call Colin up and see if he wants to do it.
I tell you, for all the folks out there in terms of being a screenwriter, believe it or not, I had written this 20 years ago. Oh. And I had written it originally for Gabriel Byrne that long ago. But, you know, I got caught up with my own career. I still had to act and do my theater and films and television shows and whatnot. And I have a tendency to put my projects aside and not think about it. But I got some encouragement from a couple of other screenwriters over the last 4 years that say to get those old screenplays off the shelf, dust them off, fix them up a little bit, and keep submitting, because you never know what can happen to them. And there's a lot of very, very prominent films that have been out that if it went through that particular cycle. I think of Forrest Gump in particular. That was on the shelf for 25 years.
Yeah.
So if you have anything out there, don't give up on it. Just take it out, dust it off, clean it up a little bit, and keep submitting. You never know what happens.
Absolutely. Well, I was very excited about you coming on the show because I want to touch upon this whole screenwriting contest situation. I don't really get a lot of people on. I don't even know if I've had someone on that I've discussed this with. I think you may be the first. But for those who don't know about, and I keep getting emails about, screenplays and contests, and I hear horror stories, and then I hear success stories. So I really want you to hone in on giving advice about that. For those who don't know about how you can enter your screenplay into screenwriting contests, can you briefly tell people about the pros and cons of doing this? Because some people say, I don't want to bother entering a contest. And other people are like, oh my gosh, you don't know what's happened because of that. So what are the pros and cons? Why should you or shouldn't you do it? Who is it for? Who isn't it for?
Well, definitely isn't for the novice, the person that decides to write every 4 or 5 or 8 years. They're really particular about the material they accept. It has to be as pristine as you can make it. I mean, even down to the typos, because something as simple as not having a screenplay format with your script will get it rejected. Excuse me. It reminds me a lot of the whole film festival process. And I think that because of my familiarity with screenwriting contests, it made the film festival process a little bit easier for me. You have to weed out which are the ones that are going to be more beneficial to you. and then decide whether or not you're going to spend that money, whether it be between $30 and $60 to enter that particular piece into a festival, or in this case, into a screenwriting contest, whether or not it's prestigious enough that will be able to further your career. And sometimes it's good to get into the screenwriting contest just for the feedback from a professional screenwriter to let you know where you stand. I've been telling some folks about pitching another website. It's very simply called Screenwriting U, as in Stanford U. It's Screenwriting U. You can look it up on the internet. It's screenwritingu.com. And this young man, Hal Crozman, does a lot for screenwriters in terms of story structure. He conducts a lot of telecasts. A podcast, is that what it's called? Podcasts. Free podcasts giving you advice over how to get an agent, or how, if you're over 50, how to write a screenplay, how to fill out that that whole structure of a story that's going to sell. And it's just a matter of getting that type of information that's going to help you specifically. I don't think that there's a blanket statement that's going to fit all screenwriters. It's just like life. You take a chance and go seek out these things, and whatever's going to help you the most, that's what you go with.
Now, there are, for those of you who don't know, there are a ton of screenwriting contests. And let's be honest, a lot of them aren't reputable or legitimate. I have heard horror stories, as I said. You just talked about a website called Screenwriting U. We want to pump that up again. I guess that's S-C-R-E-E-N-W-R-I-T-I-N-G. And then just the letter U, correct? .com?
Capital U, yeah.
Capital U. And can you give people who want to seek out screenwriting contests and some new filmmakers some tips on how they can find the legitimate ones other than the screenwritingu.com? What do you look for? Because some of them require a fee to enter a screenplay for consideration, and some of them don't. So are the ones who say, oh, you have to pay a certain fee, are they the obviously not because you've paid, but are most of them rip-off contests? Or, you know, what are the screenwriting contests that you, what do you look for to say, oh, big red flag, this is a total, this is a rip-off? What do you recommend?
Well, for myself, being in the business as long as I have, I try to go with the folks that I've heard of. Over the years, whether usually a lot of the networks, they'll have their screenwriting competitions or their TV pilot writing competitions. So you look for those, your CBS, your NBC, your ABCs. Then out of the magazines, there's one magazine in particular that I like, Movie Maker. In the Movie Maker magazine, it's simply called Movie Maker. They have a subtitle of our masterclass on screenwriting, development, production, and post and distribution. Well, and throughout that magazine, especially towards the end, they'll have a list of a bunch of contests that are going on. And I think I always tried to seek out the ones that I'm familiar with, or I'm familiar with their studio or that particular venue. If there's somebody that I haven't heard of, or if the fee tends to be a little bit high, if it's say if it's over $50, I usually throw up a little red flag, because it shouldn't be any more than $50 just to enter. And this one in particular that I'm a quarter finalist with, Final Draft, that's the number one software for screenwriters, and that's the main reason why I joined it. And the odd thing about that was, when they sent me the email stating that I was a quarter finalist, I immediately looked under the television comedy pilot screenwriters because I thought I had submitted my TV pilot and I didn't see my name. And I thought, well, that was a cruel trick for them to do that. I was just about to hit delete and something told me to go look at the dramatic features. And lo and behold, there I was with the dramatic features. And I'm quite excited about that because being a quarter finalist put me in the top 5% of those writers, and they had about 70,000 entries into that contest. Wow. So to break it down to the last 135, I feel very, very honored to be able to be in that situation. And again, that was a script that's 20 years old.
Wow, that is truly inspirational. So for sure, people need to just not give up on their old scripts. We hear about movies all the time, Oscar winners who sat on the shelf for 14 years, 25 years. So don't give up on it because, you, as you said, dust it off and get it back out there. Now, the screenwriting contest. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, if I may, one other bit of advice. For the screenwriters out there, if you have friends that are actors, see if you can get a couple of them to sit down and read it out loud, because there's something about getting out of your own head when you're reading that helps out a lot. Now, I have a little bit of an advantage being an actor, and there's not more than a paragraph that I write unless I'll read it out, say it out loud, if I don't have that flow, the rhythm of the piece that I want to write. So for those that don't have that acting experience, try to get some actors to read it out loud, and you'll get a better perspective of your story. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's actually a really good tip, because some people are just writers and they're not actors. And there's one way that you write and then you hear it in your head as a certain way, but then when you have a table reading, which you should have, you hear actors doing it and you think, oh, that's not what I wanted to say. Or you think of ideas of how to change it, and depending on what actors you choose, obviously. But I always recommend that you have maybe at least three table readings with different types of actors, because if you hear your screenplay being read by a certain actor, they're going to do it one way, and that can influence your feeling about it. And then you can have it read by someone else, and it can change again. And for example, a comedic actor, and this is going to sound crazy, but I always recommend that you should have a dramatic screenplay actually table read by comedians and vice versa. And you will be amazed at how you hear it differently, and you can either insert comedy into the dramatic areas that you didn't think you could put something to break it up, or it's not so drama, 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 and vice versa. And it really can completely enhance your screenplay. So just a little tip for you out there. But absolutely, you should have actors read it for sure, because it can change your perspective and it can color it and embellish it and just make it better. So back to the screenwriting contest. What can one hope to expect? So you submit your screenplay and you pay your fee, and then if you're lucky, you're chosen or you win. What happens from there? Do you just get the title of, oh, I won, you know, the final draft, da da da, I was what? What can you do with that? Or what happens? Can you know, you can say, oh, well, I was, you can certainly have it as a credential, but what can you do with that? How can you build on it?
Well, that credential goes quite a long way. The majority of the literary agents that are here in town, they look out for those winners of those particular contests, because it's held in such high esteem, some of those contests. So even if you're a finalist or the winner or a semifinalist and hopefully a quarterfinalist, you can probably put that on your resume, and hopefully that will help you get into some of those rooms of those meetings to discuss that, your
that
work.
Is a great that is a great tip, Dale. I am so glad you said that, because people don't realize a lot of beginning writers specifically, they go, I'm not going to spend all that money and enter it in a contest. I just want to get it done. They just want to write it and then get it done. They don't even want to test out that particular way of getting their film critique. They just think that they're going to make the film and then they'll get the critiques from the audience and blah, blah, blah. They don't even think about that as something that they can put on their resume to get, you know, an agent. And I'm so glad you brought that point up, because that is a very good way. And it's legitimate, and it's saying, look, this one of the top contests have picked me as a person that has written a screenplay that is authentic and genuine, and it has credentials, and it's something that you should look at. So people don't think about that. Dale just told you a great way to get an agent, because everybody who's a writer wants an agent. Oh my gosh. Do you know any agents? I hear that so much. Do you know agents? Do you know agents? Do you know agents? You know, so that's a really great tip for sure. I like that. Now you, you do everything. As we said earlier, you're a stage actor, a film actor, you do voiceover. You're also an accomplished singer. Let's talk a little bit about the transitions. For example, one of the transitions for an actor from stage to screen is the difference in vocal projection. So what are some of the transitions, differences, similarities, even from stage to film to voiceover actor? Just something off the top of your head that you can think about. People, my friends who are actors in theater, my aunt was a Broadway actress, and she had the worst time when she was auditioning for film, because as you know, when you're a stage actor, vocal projection, you're like screaming, everything is so dramatic, and you have to tone that down for the screen. You can't be screaming like a maniac. But what are some of the transitions and differences or similarities between film, stage, and the voiceover actor?
Well, overall, actors have to check their egos at the door, to borrow a phrase from Quincy Jones. Mm-hmm. When I started doing film, after a long career doing theater, I was living down in San Diego and got to a point where I really didn't even audition for plays down in San Diego. They would just call me and I would go and do them. Well, in the late 80s, a lot of television was coming down and producing their shows down there, and they didn't use any of the San Diego actors, because we were all stage actors and we were overdoing it. So I had to take a class. I took a film class. I was the only person with a stage background, and ended up arguing with everybody. And then I finally shut up, checked my ego at the door, listened, and primarily, it's learning how to take the same energy that you have, and you can still control that energy, just make it a little bit quieter. We even did exercises when I was in film class a long time ago where we whispered whole scenes.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Because we always feel, especially in film, especially in television, and even in commercials now, it's not the lines, it's the moments in between the lines. And people are in a hurry to fill in those gaps of sound. But it wasn't that big of a transition for me once I decided to shut up and listen.
Yeah.
And watch. And pretty much for voiceovers. I mean, I'm able to do a couple of different characters here and there, but primarily is being able to tell the story. So I even, when I get into that recording booth, I revert back to when my kids were little, and I would read their bedtime stories. And I didn't do it just across just this monotone type. I came up with these characters with the witches and the warlocks and all the different characters in those bedtime stories. And it's funny how you go back to that once you get in that recording booth when you're doing different characters.
Now, I heard that from many, many, many my actor friends, that, and also my voiceover friends, that being a voiceover actor is kind of a hard gig to get because it's word of mouth, or it's sort of a you got to be in the click kind of job. What is the best advice on how an actor can break into this click, so to speak, and get voiceover work? Because it's a good gig if you can get it. A lot of my friends are very successful voiceover actors, and they love the fact that they could just roll out of bed and put some flip-flops on and go and do 45 minutes and make a fortune. So how can every actor get this great voiceover work?
Well, there's not really a lot of how-to. I've been doing a lot of different things my whole career, but the voiceover gigs were the one thing that was the toughest to get into.
Right.
I really didn't take off with that until probably 5 years ago. And I've been doing this for 37 years.
Mm-hmm.
So there is no rhyme or reason. If you're lucky to get into one of those ADR groups, the loop groups, those are the folks that fill in all the noises in movies and commercials and whatnot. I tried that forever, thinking, trying to ask a friend who could get me in there, and you're right, it's very, very tough to get in. My commercial agent happens to be a very prestigious voiceover agency too, and that's how I crossed over from commercials over into voiceovers. Well, I still do both, but I was very fortunate because of the legacy of my particular agency.
Now, I'm going to ask you a question. In your whole entire life, your span of acting, what has been or who has been your favorite character and why? Whether it was stage, screen, voiceover.
Oh, I portrayed?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess I have one in each category. In musical theater, it would probably be the Ken role in Ain't Misbehavin'. I've done that 9 times across the country. Serious theater, I was blessed enough to be in an August Wilson play with August Wilson himself. As a matter of fact, August was the one that convinced me that I could be a writer.
Wow.
In Joe Turner's Come and Gone, I understudied the three men in that when they were at the Old Globe Theater. So any August Wilson play is my favorite. Dramatic television, I played a character named Stomp in the show House a couple years ago. It was the episode where he was in the insane asylum. And I guess it went over so well, they included me on the Emmy ballot for guest actor in a drama series. And in that same year, character I played in Modern Family, I was put on the Emmy ballot for outstanding guest actor in a comedy. So, I've had a little.
That is something, Dale. That is something. My God, you should feel so proud of yourself. You really have had a successful career. It's wonderful. So the last question I want to ask you is, what do you feel would be the best advice that you could give a person who decides to pursue a career as an actor?
You have to want it. I don't know. I had mentioned earlier about Cleavon, about Blazing Saddles, in particular, Cleavon Little, who said that line about whipping it out so many years. But Cleavon is from the San Diego area, and I would pick his brain about the very same thing, and he would give me the same answer over and over again. You got to want it. And I didn't really understand what he meant by that. But you really have to want it. It's a type of thing that if you're faced with an audition and you have a regular job, the person that separates themselves as from the serious actor to the person that just kind of dabbling in it is that when you get that audition, the first thought is, okay, which lie am I going to tell to get out of work? Because I'm going to this audition.
Yeah, it's happening.
I don't know. My boss might get mad. Who cares? Yeah. If you want it, you got to want it.
Yeah.
And that's what I meant by that.
Yes, it's very, very, very easy to confuse the difference between you having a passion for the art or if you just want it as a hobby. And a lot of people waste many, many decades thinking that they actually want to be an actor, but in actuality, they want it as a hobby, but they don't figure that out. So you got to figure it out quite early. And there's nothing wrong with you being an actor as a hobby. It's just as if you were, you decided to be a part-time musician and that's a hobby, or if you collect stamps or if you collect anything, there is nothing wrong with that. So find out early if you really want to be an actor as a profession or as a hobby. And your life will be so much more simple. Well, I want to thank you, Mr. Dale Turner. Thank you so much for coming on the show. You gave such sage advice. I'm sure people really got a lot out of everything you had to say today. And so much success, and I wish you so much more. And I'm so excited to meet you this Thursday at your cast party for My Name is Lamar. That should be very exciting.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. A lot of the cast and crew hasn't seen it yet, so I'm, thankful to be able to host that and meet everybody and thank folks for their contributions. And those folks who want to see the film, again, the Hollywood Black Film Festival is, I believe, February 22nd. And that's going to be at some theaters in Marina Del Rey. But just check the My Name is Lamar website, and you'll pick up that information.
And that's MyNameIsLamar.com?
That would be, you caught me off guard. What?
Okay.
I don't even know my own.
Well, if they go to DailyTurner.com, I'm sure that it's on DailyTurner.com. So everybody.
Well, I haven't updated that. Okay, I do have, I'm looking at the... looking at the URL for the Lamar website, which is it would be turnerworks24.wix.com/Lamar Short Film.
Okay, you know we got to change that up, Dale, and we got to get My Name is Lamar.com. Get it,
you know what,
get
folks,
it done,
you just
Dale.
Wanna go on the Facebook web. Just go on to Facebook and type in My Name is Lamar and there'll be some stuff there.
By the way, real quick, you got to fix the bottom of your website because I was trying to promote your social media links and they're all messed up at the bottom of your website. So if you go to Dale's website.
Really? I'm looking at it right now. It looks fine.
Click the Facebook and click the Twitter and click all the IMDb and you'll see where it goes. But fix that up, honey. All right, sweetie, we'll see you on Thursday. Thank you so much for coming on the website, DailyTurner.com. Thank you for tuning in and we'll see you next week on Question Reality. Say goodbye to your fans, Dale.
Y'all have a good evening.
Bye.
You're listening to Question Reality with Priscilla Leona, right here on LA Talk Radio.